Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us this morning as we talk with Bassam Shakashuri, UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry and the William T. Evu Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin Idea. He's also the director of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy. Bassam, it's a pleasure to have you back with us again.
I'm happy to be here, Jim.
And the 2009 American Recovery and Reinvestment Act provides $21.5 billion for federal research and development. NIH, the National Institute of Health, receives more than $10 billion. The NSF got $3 billion. The Department of Energy garnered $2.5 billion. NASA got another $1 billion. What will these funds be used for?
First, let me say that this is a very excellent situation that the science community finds itself in. We have a large number of highly qualified scientific research proposals that will lead to the improvement of the quality of life throughout the United States and elsewhere. And this infusion of funds is going to be very helpful through the agencies that you have mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
For the National Science Foundation specifically, the $3 billion will be used as follows. $2 billion will be used to support already received research proposals that have been peer-reviewed and judged worthy of support, but there just wasn't enough money to fund them prior to this. We all recognize that this is a kind of a one-shot deal.
Right.
This is part of the stimulus package that the president and the Congress have not only proposed but have put in place. These funds will support explorations of new technologies, will support investigations where alternative energy resources will be hopefully in due time brought to the market. This is not going to happen immediately.
Right.
Research, Jim, takes a long time. The support for research activities can lead to improvement of the quality of life of individuals and of society. And these investments are going to really boost the current enterprise in science and in technology. The funds will support people. Will also support, that's the $2 billion, the support of people, graduate students, faculty, undergraduate students. The other $1 billion will support major acquisition of instruments and improvement of infrastructures. Many of our laboratories, not only here in Wisconsin and elsewhere in our listening area, but around the country are old. And so this will help improve the quality of the facilities that we have. And in doing so, it'll create jobs. These instruments have to be made by industry. There'll be an increase in information technology areas. There'll be an increase in jobs, even blue-collar jobs, where, as I say, the instruments will be made. New buildings will be constructed. I think this can be good all around. Now, the real test is whether it will be how it will happen. Will the science community rise to the occasion and deliver? On this front, I'm optimistic. But as a scientist, I have to tell you that the entire stimulus package, not just for NSF and NIH and Department of Energy, but for the entire economic situation that we find ourselves in, I have to tell you as a scientist that I have to take a wait-and-see attitude.
Right.
I'll give you a political answer to that same question. Yes, we have to do it. We must do it. We must have the will to do this, and not only in the science community, but in the business community, at the local level, at the state level, at the national level. This is a fabulous opportunity that can really help us. And if we don't rise to the occasion, that the potential results can be very, very drastic and adverse.
What are the prospects for this $21.5 billion filtering down directly into Wisconsin?
Oh, I'd say that prospects are very good because there are many proposals from scientists, engineers, mathematicians mm-hmm. in the state of Wisconsin that are at these federal agencies, at the National Institutes of Health, National Science Foundation, Department of Energy, NASA. I would say the likelihood of getting some of these funds in our immediate listening area here is rather high.
We're talking today with Bassam Shakashuri, who's the UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry, William T. Evia, Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin IDEA, and the Director of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy, as we talk about science and research. And if you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number for you is 800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. And if you want to keep up with Bassam's interests, you can go to his website, which is scifun.org, scifun.org. He wears a Science is Fun button in all public appearances, and he has it on today.
It's tattooed on me, Joe.
I'll take your word for it, Bassam. You published an article in the spring issue of Wisconsin People and Ideas, which is published by the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters, and write of the widening gap between those of us who flourish because of advances in science and technology and those who do not. And among the things that you're writing about is you find it astonishing that there are more than a billion people in the world who are living on less than a dollar a day.
Jim, the gap between those of us who live in what I call the science-rich sector of society and the science-poor sector of society is very wide. Yes, the World Bank reports that there are over 1 billion people that live daily on $1. And this is just astonishing. It's mind-boggling. How can we, as the custodians of these advances in knowledge, in science, in technology, in agriculture, in business, how can we tolerate having so many other people around the world living at such low levels of poverty? It is not only heartbreaking, it is detrimental to our environment. The negligence that we have as a society rich in science and technology in the United States and elsewhere around the world must be shared with fellow human beings around the globe so that we can participate fully in raising their standards of living. They can participate also in becoming part of a productive society, part of a society where disease is not so dominant, part of a society where kids go to school. The education levels around the world are not as good as they are in the United States. In many places, there are good educational levels. But when you have one-sixth of the total population of the planet living on about $1 a day, that is something to really think about and to do something about.
Mm-hmm. Are we basically just talking about refugees who are in this situation, or are there people who are not refugees and only able to live on that amount of money?
Oh, no, we're not talking about refugees. We're talking about people living in societies that in countries in Asia, in Africa. Even some of these people are in the United States, not many, mm-hmm. That their productivity is impaired because they don't have access to clean water. They don't have reliable information about the spread of disease. They don't have good food to eat. It's a very dire situation, and yet, you know, we in the science-rich sector of the world society can not only improve the quality of our lives, but the quality of the lives of people in the science-poor sector.
We're again talking with Bassam Shakashuri, UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry, as we talk about science and research. And if you'd like to join the conversation, we have lines open for you. The number is 1-800-642-1234. The email address is talk@wpr.org. In the article that you wrote for Wisconsin Ideas or Wisconsin People and Ideas, you write, "The moral questions we face regarding quality of life, deadlier weapons, and global climate change make it essential that all of us gain science literacy." What do you mean by science literacy, and how does that differ from, let's say, scientific competence or expertise?
Well, I by science literacy, I mean an appreciation of science, an understanding of the benefits of technology and the potential risks associated with advances in both science and technology. Scientific competence and scientific expertise refers to the scientists, to the practitioners of science, mm-hmm. and how they go about doing their professional life. As you know, Jim, I'm an advocate of achieving science literacy. Science literacy, as I say, is the appreciation of what science and technology can do for us, but also recognizing that along with these advances in science and technology, there can be potential risks. And that's it's very important for the democratic society that we live in, that we have a high level of science literate people and groups, because if you are science literate, then you are enabled to make informed choices, to be skeptical, to reject shams, quackery, unproven conjecture, when matters that relate to science and technology are before us. That's why it is really very, very important to be in a position where we avoid being bamboozled into making foolish decisions when it comes to matters of science and technology.
So how do you get people to that threshold of science literacy, given the kind of world that we live in and the kind of media that we have?
Jim, education is the key. Education is the key in our society, in all societies. And we must acquire the skills to succeed in our schools, to succeed in the various endeavors that we pursue. And education takes place at home. It takes place in the schools. It takes place at the workplace. Education takes place when you're outdoors. We're always being educated. And we ask questions. We look outside. Now, springtime. The plants are about to burst. The flowers will be coming out. The trees will be turning green. We ask questions about what is happening in nature and the way in which we deal with answering those questions that people of all ages ask, not just youngsters, but especially youngsters. The mm-hmm. way in which we deal with those questions is the key to developing an attitude toward understanding the beautiful but complex world that we live in. And science literacy is to develop that kind of appreciation and to nurture the curiosity that kids of all ages have. We have so many advances in technology now that we didn't even have 10, 15, 20, 50 years ago. And we should learn how they came about, how to put them to good use, how to avoid having them be misused. And that's part of being science literate.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Bassam Shakashuri. Dave Potratz is our on-air producer today. I'm Jim Packard, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today as we talk about science and research with Bassam Shakashuri. And if you'd like to join in, there is a line open for you at 800-642-1234. But let's take some calls. We'll go to the phones, and we'll start off with Lanny in Land O'Lakes. Hi, Lanny.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question has to do with our diet. and how it seems that most of our country and probably everybody else is addicted to high fructose corn syrup and our cheap food philosophy and the type of corn they're growing now, and how it seems like most everybody is getting type 2 diabetes from this. And I'll hang up and listen to Sam off the air.
I think we have tremendous advances in the nutritional sciences that we don't take advantage of. And why don't we? Primarily because we're not sufficiently educated about the nutritional values of what we eat, whether it is sucrose or fructose or a variety of types of sugars. Amounts of food are also important. And you know, in Wisconsin, we have a cultural addiction to brats, beer, and brandy, the three B's. And maybe if we learned more about the metabolism of alcohol and what other foods we ingest, maybe if we accept some of the scientific findings about these topics, then we can begin to make a dent in obesity and in drug abuse. So I would say that question about sugar intake is very, very important. And you know, Jim, on this program, you've had Susan Nitzky, who talks mm-hmm. about these issues. And I will put actually on my website in the summary that I prepare after making this appearance, I will put a link, a specific link to the sugar intake and its relationship to diabetes and so on.
Excellent. That'll be at SciFun, SCIFUN.org. To Patrick in La Crosse next. Hello, Patrick. What's on your mind today?
Hi. I was very glad that Dr. Shakashiri made mention of the billion or more people who live on less than a dollar a day. And as long as we have science in a capitalist world, or not even a capitalist world, it's fake capitalism. It's socialism for the rich and dog-eat-dog capitalism for the rest of us. As long as money controls science, science will be used for mostly deadly purposes or for purposes of making cheap plastic crud that can be used to generate a quick profit. And until people of science and people who support science stop just going along with the flow and start taking a stand that science needs to benefit people, not money, we're just going to keep getting science that's harmful and not in the greater interest. And I hope he'll have a thoughtful comment on that. I'll listen off the air.
Thank you. Patrick.
Thank you, Patrick. I appreciate your sharing your thoughts with us. As I say, advances in science and in technology that can lead to improving the quality of our lives, but they also can be accompanied by consequences that, if we're not careful about, will be detrimental to us. I would say, Patrick, that most of the advances that we've had in science have been beneficial. And the advances in science are not made to get more money. Advances in science are made because people ask questions. Scientists in their laboratories, they explore nature. They explore the development of new products. People pursue scientific questions, for some, because it's the end in itself. For others, it's to benefit society. And you're right. We have to be careful about the flow of scientific information and scientific knowledge and products that result from science, because it is up to us to make decisions on how to use those products, whether it is inexpensive plastic coming from petroleum originally, or recycling, or whether it is the food that we eat, the beverages that we consume. All of these issues are really up to us to decide about, and that's why it is important to be informed and to be educated about progress in science. And this education takes place at home, it takes place in school, it takes place in the workplace, everywhere. And that's why we really need to be appreciative of what science and technology have brought us and what else they can bring us. But we also have to be careful about how we use the products that come from these advances.
Let's go back to the phones, and Jerry in Brown Deer is next. Hi, Jerry.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. I would like, a few minutes ago, Dr. Shakashviri used the word bamboozled. Well, we were bamboozled by the chairman of Wisconsin Energy to spend over $3 billion for electric power production, which we don't need, because the existing power plants are mismanaged. Example, at night and on weekends, the power plants operate but produce very little electricity and sell very little.
Mm-hmm.
We could store this electricity by making huge quantities of ice, for example, and cool buildings with ice water the following day. We could compress air into abandoned mines and man-made holes in the ground, cavities, and we could use compressed air the following day to propel turbines in lieu of steam. This is enormous. I don't have a word in my vocabulary to describe how much energy we could produce at night and on weekends and don't. And this goes on all over the world. How about that?
Well, Jerry, I'll say to you and everyone else who's listening, one of the joys of being on Wisconsin's public radio is to hear the variety of views that people in the listening audience have. And I appreciate what you're saying, and I appreciate what I think you're trying to tell us is that when we have technology to help society, the decisions have to be made by all of us, not only by the people who are in charge of the technology. And, of course, there are business decisions that enter into this. There are scientific decisions. But they're also social and societal decisions. So technical expertise in itself has to be brought to the forefront of the conversation so that we all end up making intelligent choices that will benefit us and will try to optimize, if not maximize, the benefits from the various technologies. You're specifically talking about energy. Energy is one of the most important issues that faces us as a society, not only here in Wisconsin, but around the world. There are different forms of energy that we can harness and we can use efficiently. The Industrial Revolution utilized fossil fuels, basically, to bring us to where we are now. It made a huge impact on society, but now we know more than we did 150 years ago or so. We know more why? Because we did more research, and we are thinking about the results of this research, and that's why now we are concerned about climate change, we're concerned about fuel efficiency, we're concerned about alternative uses of energy. So you're absolutely right, Jerry. These are important issues that we should think about and act on together in collaboration with our business leaders, in collaboration with our scientific leaders. I believe in citizens really taking action, well, first becoming involved and then taking action about a variety of these issues. And I, again, say to you and to others in the listening audience how important it is for us to participate in this process.
Jerry, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate hearing from you. As we talk about science and research with Bassam Shakashiri, who is the director of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy, we've been talking about an article that he wrote in the current issue of Wisconsin People and Ideas, which is published by the Wisconsin Academy of Sciences, Arts, and Letters. And within that, you are proposing several initiatives in the educational field, including Teachers for Milwaukee, Science on the Road, Science Festival, and much more.
Yes, this is an opportunity that I have taken advantage of to make some very serious proposals for all of us to consider. And by the way, on my website, either later today or tomorrow, I will post this article with permission from the Wisconsin Academy magazine. One specific initiative is a new 10-year initiative that that provides 4-year undergraduate scholarships at public and private colleges and universities for recruiting and educating 200 new teachers every year. And these new teachers, upon graduation, will be are to be employed by the Milwaukee Public School System for a period of 5 years. Inner school systems in Milwaukee and elsewhere in big cities around the country need a dramatic change in what goes on in the schools. And so my proposal is that during this 5-year period that MPS would employ these teachers, that there will be professional development activities conducted jointly by MPS and the institutions that granted those degrees to the teachers. And this will require committed support from MPS, from the university, from the whole area where this goes on. The goal is to put in place qualified, dedicated teachers to help our Milwaukee public school system. I know people care about the quality of education, and I know people realize that teachers play a very critical role in what goes on in any school. But I also want to say that we must empower teachers and put them in an environment where they can succeed and stay. I tip my hat to the teachers in the Milwaukee public school system now. They have a very difficult job to do. But we need an infusion of new blood. We need to take collective responsibility for the quality of teaching in our urban and suburban cities. And so that's one of the initiatives that I have proposed.
All right. Let's go back to the phone to Mike in Milwaukee. Hello, Mike. What's on your mind today?
Oh, hello, and good morning to you. Professor Shakashuri, my daughter was a student of yours at UW-Madison, and I think in part because of you, she's going to be a high school chemistry and biology teacher, and she's now getting a master's in education at Ohio State University. I'd like your opinion. What advantages would she have if she went on to get a doctorate in education in addition to the master's? Can you talk about career opportunities for someone who wants to be a high school chemistry teacher and also get a doctorate in education?
Sure. Thank you, Mike. I'm always happy to hear from former students and especially from the parents of former students. It's one of the rewards of being a classroom teacher is to hear from and about former students. I would say the career opportunities are very good if she were to pursue her goal of wanting to become a high school teacher. I think we need good high school teachers in all areas, not just in urban areas, but in rural areas as well. Getting a doctorate degree in education with a focus on science education, I think, would be helpful. It is important for every teacher, once they finish with their education, to put themselves in an environment that nurtures their development. And the community where they teach has to be supportive of that and has to be rewarding them. I don't mean only financially. Yeah, especially financially. I mean, teacher salaries are not so high, but also rewarding them in being looked up to as members of that community. So, getting a doctorate degree in education, I think, would be very helpful, especially because getting a doctorate degree involves doing some research. And when you do research in a disciplined way, then you learn more about how to teach, what to teach, and you can influence your students and having them develop a more inquisitive attitude about whatever the subject matter is that they are learning. So I am happy to hear from you, Mike, about the progress of your daughter. And I would urge that she and others interested in this contact their schools and colleges of education because they have career placement offices. I know we have it here at UW-Madison. I know they have it at Ohio State as well. Every university that has a college or school of education has career placement office, and that's where you can get some specific information about what's available now.
Mike, thank you very much for the call. We do have lines open. If you have a comment or a question for Bassam, the number for you is 1-800-642-1234. Our email address, talk@wpr.org. Talking with Bassam Shakashiri, director of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy. He's also the William T. Evue Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin IDEA and a professor of chemistry.
Jim, you asked me about another initiative that I really am very excited about. I'm excited about all 10 initiatives I've proposed. Otherwise, I would not have proposed them. But this one is called Wisconsin Science and Engineering on the Road. This is an attempt to get vans, buses equipped with chemicals, with instruments, and staffed by teaching personnel. And the purpose of this is to bring modern science and engineering education not only to inner city neighborhoods but to suburbs and small rural communities in Wisconsin. I've proposed having 25 such vans that will be donated by the private sector, and the colleges and universities are to provide then the instruments and the staff for that. And I'm happy to engage in a conversation with everyone in the state who cares about such matters as to what the details are. We're just giving headlines here in terms of what these activities are.
This is kind of a modern, traditional traveling medicine show.
You might call it that, but
updated.
But we don't use any snake oil or anything like that, Jim. So we're this is not a new concept. I mean, people do this selectively in other parts of the country, but I'm proposing a major initiative here where we have 25 different vans equipped with biological equipment, chemical equipment, physical equipment, engineering equipment that would go to different parts of the state and spend a week or so in each location year-round to provide access to instruments that are not available in the school setting.
Mm-hmm.
Or a two-year institution, for example, it would be another target. So there's a whole slew of different types of activities that we can pursue in this initiative called Wisconsin Science and Engineering on the Road.
Richard in Montford is next. Hello, Richard.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that I think Professor Shakiri doesn't really know what's happening out in the field. People are being asked to forego their master's degree because the school board doesn't want to pay for a master's. The master's and PhD are basic in education are basically good for administrative jobs. That's what that will get you, but it may get you no job in many areas because they don't want to pay the scale for the advanced degrees. This is one of the sad stories of what's going on in education.
Richard, I'm sure that you say this because you have experience with that, and I don't doubt what you're saying about that. But what I'm saying is that the more educated we are, the more we can get our communities and school boards and colleges and universities to appreciate the value of education, then the jobs will be there and the pay will be there. So I know for a fact that there are such jobs. As I say, perhaps you're speaking from a particular experience, and I respect that.
Well, I'm a retired university professor, but I've been doing substitute teaching. I originally had my undergrad was an education degree. Chemistry was one of my areas. From University of Wisconsin, but I'm getting a good look at it through substituting now that I'm retired, and I came from a family of teachers. My dad was a public school teacher. But I see this happening, and it saddens me, but it's what's going on. And considering the courses in the degrees for education, the advanced degrees, that's basically what they're good for is administrative positions. As far as teaching you research. I have my question about that.
Richard, I'm sure you would agree that we need good administrators, don't you?
Oh, yes, yes. I just want her to be aware that, or the father to be aware that that's really where that's best directed. And that's fine with me. I mean, they do learn some tough stuff. I helped type papers for a gal that was working on her master's, and I had kind of looked down, as so many of us with PhDs do, looked down on the EDD route, but I saw what she had to do for a master's, and it convinced me that she was learning very good stuff for administration, and that's exactly what she was doing it for. And I assume that the doctorate's the same way. I'm not sure what they offer at Wisconsin. It's probably an EDD, and that's a little different in terms of the research content, but it really is, I think, preparing them for this incredible world of paperwork that faces the administrators today.
There are programs, there are doctoral programs to prepare individuals to become principals and administrators. There's no question about that. But that's not the only doctoral route that is available in education. That is one of many. And again, I really appreciate your interest in bringing this point up here, but I also want to take advantage of what you said, that you are retired and you're teaching in the school. I think retirees have a lot to offer to society, and I salute you for what you're doing, Richard, and I urge other people who are retired who may have the interest and the inclination to help our schools, our colleges and universities in as volunteers and also, you know, for pay, to come forward. We have such richness in our society that should be tapped and should be, and the energy should be channeled to help improve the quality of life that we have in our communities.
Richard, thank you very much for the call. I'd like to mention the chemistry department's colloquium Spring 09, which comes up this Friday afternoon at 3:30, Seminar Hall, which is also 1315 Chemistry on the UW-Madison campus. And you've got Professor Neil Lane from Rice University coming in to talk.
Neil Lane is not only a professor at Rice University, but he was the director of the National Science Foundation in the 90s, and then he became the president's science advisor to President Bill Clinton. He is speaking tomorrow at 3:30 in the chemistry building, and his topic is Science in the Obama Era.
What's the address of the chemistry building?
It's 1101 University Avenue in Madison.
Okay.
And just walk in and look for the seminar hall.
All right. And that starts at 3:30, and it's free and open to the public.
Of course it is. And we hope to see people there as well from outside of the chemistry department as well as from inside.
You have one other event coming up in the next couple of weeks that we might mention. Do you recall what that is?
We have several events. We have science expeditions coming up on April the 4th in Madison. It's just part of a series of activities for the community. But we also have on April the 9th a public lecture on science and Islam. One of the programs of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy deals with science, religion, and ethics. And under this auspices, we have a physics professor from the United Arab Emirates who is coming to Madison to address the topic of science and Islam.
All right. Bassam, thank you so much. We look forward to your next visit. Bassam Shakashuri is UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry and the William T. Evue Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin IDEA, Director of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy. He will have a summary of his appearance here on the show up on his website later today at scifun.org. If you'd like a copy of the program, all you have to do is call the radio store at 1-800-747-7444, and you're asking for program 326F, as in Frank. I'm Jim Packard. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.